With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Case File 8 of Microscope, the show that examines some of the world's biggest mysteries. There's been a lot of conspiracy theories over the years, but this time we're looking at one of the biggest, the claim that the Apollo moon landings were faked. I phoned up Greg Onions BA, a painter and decorator who has spent his career designing and painting the sets of a huge number of films. While working on Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, Greg claims that he was recruited by Kubrick and the CIA into helping create a set for the fake moon landing. I spoke to Greg about how this audacious hoax was pulled off and what the CIA and other government agencies are doing to keep the public compliant. Greg also spoke about how he is trying to leave clues about what happened in the film, in the same way that Kubrick apparently left references to the moon landing in The Shining. But the recording starts with me asking Greg how much of his life he has spent painting.
Yes, I'm 64. And I've been a painter and decorator since I was 5.
Oh, really? What was your first sort of painting and decorating job?
Well, I saw a spider crawl across the bathtub one morning. Do you know that pure joy of seeing a creepy crawly? So I got out my easel, I got out my canvas, my hog hair brush,
sure.
And I painted this lovely little spider.
Painted a picture of him or painted the spider itself?
Could you say that again, please?
Did you paint a picture of the spider or did you actually... When you say you painted the spider, did you paint on the spider or paint the spider?
Well, both. He ran across the canvas, I painted the spider and then showed my mother, who said, what a lovely picture of a spider.
Right, so you painted the picture of the spider on the spider.
I painted a beautiful scale 1:1 yeah. picture of a spider onto a spider. Yes, you're quite correct.
Right, gotcha.
And it's still hanging in my mother's bedroom above her single bed. It's a sad story, which I can't go into right now.
Gotcha. And is the spider still on the canvas?
No, because when I showed my mother 59 years ago now, it ran away.
Right.
And so what was left was his shadow, if you like his silhouette, his outline. So sure. God knows where that spider is right now, but he must be the most funkiest looking spider in the land. Or he died of lead poisoning, either one.
Now, you've got in touch with the show because you were... you've been a painter and decorator, as you say, for 59 years. You claim you were involved in designing and painting the set of the fake moon landings.
Well, I'm going to be frank with you. I've been listening to your podcast. You might have been wondering who I am. And this painting and decorating lark has left my lungs shot. I don't have long, so I've decided to reveal all my secrets. And I helped Stanley Kubrick paint the set for the moon landings in 1969.
And had you worked with Kubrick before?
I did, yes, on 2001. And I was in charge of painting the craters. And he came over to me one afternoon and he said, "That's a beautiful crater, Greg." And I looked down, and, you know, it was beautiful.
Sure.
And he just walked off. That was the measure of the man.
That was Kubrick was like.
Yeah, he was a very nasty individual. Sick. I don't like to use swear words, but he was fucked, this guy. He was tapped. but anyway, I was painting the space before 2001. Sure. And I don't know if you've ever painted space before, but yeah. You know, bugger me, that's a big old canvas.
I gotcha, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it took me a while. But, you know, he looked, I had a paint, a pot of paint, right, that was only about, well, picture a mustard pot.
Yeah.
That's how much paint I used. Black
paint.
For
space?
For space.
Yeah.
Now, Stanley came over and he said, I don't think you've got enough paint there, Greg.
Gotcha.
And I looked at him, and now, there is a saying in this business, a little bit always goes a long way.
Mm.
He looked at me, and he said, say that again. I said, Mr. Kubrick, I was always polite to him, Mr. Kubrick, a little goes a long way. A week later, Henry Kissinger.
Henry Kissinger rocks up.
Henry Kissinger and Donald Rumsfeld were at my front door.
Sure.
Now, I lived in Surrey at the time, so yeah. As you can imagine, I was quite surprised. And they said, look, you've got the keys to the studio, haven't you? I said, yes,
for,
I have.
For what you were doing in 2001?
Yes. And they went, okay, and then they just left. That was it.
That was it. They'd flown over, just asked you that, didn't get the keys?
They just wanted to know if I had the keys.
Right.
Anyway, I thought I was dreaming.
You thought you were dreaming?
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah. So I did that, and, you know, in fact, I don't know if you've seen 2001, A Space Odyssey.
It's a great film. And you did the craters and space?
No, he got rid of the craters. He said they looked shit on camera. That was a horrible thing to say to me, actually.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he said they were great when he looked at them.
Sure, but on camera they
looked... Like I said, the guy was tapped. The guy weren't right. So anyway, I was a bit sad about that. But one lunchtime, 1969, I got a phone call from Stanley. And he said, do you still have the keys?
So he was asking you for the keys as well?
Yeah. Turns out I was the only one who had them. And it caused nightmares for the whole set. Really did. I said, I do, Stanley. He said, right, I'm outside. Get in the car. We get in the car. We drive to the 2001 set. That, now, bear in mind, this film's already been filmed. So why the fuck is it... Why is it still up, I'm thinking? It was the lovely MGM Studios. And, you know, the moon is 237,000 miles away.
Yeah.
But not that day.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that the actual fact?
That is the fact. But let me tell you, on that day... It wasn't that far. No way.
Right.
It was in Surrey.
Yeah, we gotcha.
And he said, do you still have your little pot of magic paint? I said, Stanley, I do. I always carry it around in my pocket. He said, surely that's run out. I said, no, it hasn't, Stanley. He said, I want you to paint the space again.
Gotcha. So they
I said to him, surely, Stanley, you can use the old one. Because that took me a long time.
Yeah.
He said, no, space always changes. You got to do it all again. So I spent, it was about, 6 months. Yeah, 6 months painting the space. Yeah.
Did it feel substantially different from what you had painted on 2001?
No, it was exactly the same. Jet black with little specks of you know, grey.
White.
Yeah. At one point, I did sneeze, and Stanley did ask me what it was, and I got a bit scared, so I just told him it was like a planet had blown up, and you know, we just basically he thought it was so real, he thought he was actually looking at space, and he actually got scared. He said, "What's going on there, John?" And I said,
"Greg."
He said, "What's going on there, Greg?" Pardon me. Yeah. And I told you, the guy's mad. The guy's fucking insane, this guy. He calls you what he wants. Anyway, a wonderful job. And I'll never forget the day they actually filmed the moon landing. I was stood there. They cut out me standing there because he said that wouldn't have looked right.
Right, gotcha. You were actually on set.
Oh, yeah, I was still up the ladder. Yeah.
Right.
But I said to him, I said, Stanley, think about it. No one's been to space, so no one knows what the fuck's up there.
Yeah.
So I said, look, I'll paint myself green. I can be a little alien.
Yeah.
Just going up a ladder. Leaning against space. I said, there's poetry in that, Stanley. There's poetry in that.
And what did he say to that?
He got very angry with me on that day. But I wish he'd got angry with me before I'd painted myself green. It was, you know, I was walking around. I looked like a chump. I really did.
And was there a lot of secrecy on set? How did they keep it a secret for so long?
Well, Buzz Aldrin, who doesn't exist, by the way... was played by a CIA agent.
Yep.
And Neil Armstrong, who is a figment of your imagination, was also played by a CIA agent. There was a skeleton crew. It was just the cameraman, Stanley, a dog trainer, and me. And that was it. That was it.
What was funny? What was the dog trainer for?
There was a dog trainer, and you're going to have to forgive me. There were 6 dogs as well. I do apologise. Right. My memory is slowly rotting away because of the lead lining
of the paint.
Of the paint, and also of a suit that I bought at Carnaby Street in 1963, which I shouldn't wear, but it does give me a lovely figure.
You wear a lead. You wore a lead suit.
Yeah.
Does it rust?
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. I can't move a lot, really. My hands have been in the air for nearly 50 years.
I guess it makes it quite hard to be a painter decorator in that position.
Well, that's why I only have this very small. Pot of paint, because I can't be going always in the brush and out the, you know, in the pot and out the pot. I need to be able to go in the pot and use whatever's on the end of that brush for about 8 to 10 months.
So you're on the set. Let me just sort of paint the scene. You're on the set. It's just you, Kubrick, the cameraman, a couple of CIA agents playing Aldrin and Armstrong, a dog handler, and there's 6 dogs. And what role do the dogs provide? Are they like security for the set?
Moondust. They were painted silver. And the idea was that at one point they'd run across and they'd look like moondust.
Right.
Now, I said we should maybe use mice. Because they look more like little rocks. Yeah. But painted dogs to look like dust and rocks. Let me tell you, that was the biggest challenge of my career.
Sure. Why was it so hard? Because they run around.
They run around. They also love the smell of me.
They love the smell of you?
They did. And I can't tell you why. I mean, it's a long time ago now, but 1969, my aftershave, it was the fashion of the time, was a lovely mix of bone marrow and peanut butter. So,
right, gotcha.
Yeah, and it was at the time.
I'm sure you were a figure of some fashion in the community with your suit made of lead and your bone marrow peanut butter perfume. Sure, you were quite the catch.
So oh, I did all dogs. The houses. I did all the houses. I did the Beatles. I did the Rolling Stones. I did all the houses.
You painted the houses of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones?
I did, yeah. John Lennon made a lovely cup of tea. 3 parts milk. He left the bag in. And he'd always let... I remember this about him, actually. He'd always leave a custard cream, but he'd say it was his. He'd give you the cup of tea and he'd say, "Don't eat the custard cream, that's mine." He was sick, he weren't right. But that's the kind of guy he was. Well documented, of course. But yes, so there were 6 dogs and they were running around like crazy. And, you know, they were sprayed silver. So when they ran onto the set, you couldn't see where they were.
Right, gotcha. So is you and a dog handler trying to track down these dust dogs?
What happened was you could kind of work out movement, but it looked like the set was like fucking moving, man. Excuse my French. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you were looking at the set going, right, it looks like it's made out of quicksand. It was moving about, grooving.
Gotcha.
So the CIA agents were like, well, how are we going to walk on that? We might step on a dog.
Yeah.
I'm dressed in green. I'm an alien. And I'm going...
And what was the dog handler doing at this point?
He was a nightmare, this guy. He was on drugs.
It's the 60s.
It was the 60s. He was on drugs. We got a letter from Richard Nixon wishing us well. He threw that in the bin. Stanley hated him because he had no control of the dogs. You know, at one point it was discussed. We had a secret meeting.
A secret meeting? You're on your secret set. So it's the moon. You're there with Aldrin Armstrong, yeah, Kubrick, yeah, and a cameraman. And you go, right, we have a secret meeting without the dog handler.
Yeah. What we did was, look, we told the dog handler, look, will you go out and get us some crisps?
Yeah.
You know, this guy was a twat. So he went, yeah, all right, but give me money first. Horrible. Anyway, I gave him a couple of shillings. Mm. Anyway, what we did, we thought, right, where can we hide? So we all decided to paint ourselves the same silver as the moon.
Right, and the dogs.
So when he came back with the crisps, he walked into the studio and he couldn't see us.
Sure.
So he thought, oh, they must have gone out or something. So he left the studio and then we all chatted on the moon about what we thought about this guy.
Gotcha.
It was later found out that he wasn't a dog handler at all. The dogs were wild, stray dogs that had walked into the studio at the same time he had walked in.
Six random dogs.
Yeah, no one knew who they were.
Yeah.
And the dog handler, he was actually a policeman who had completely got off his tits the night before. He'd walked into the MGM studio by mistake. He was on a massive come down, woke up, and then we were all in there. And he just pretended to be someone, and we presumed
he just stole it out.
This guy. He was an absolute arsehole, but he stole it out, this guy. He was clever. In the end, I liked him, and he was best man at my wedding.
Obviously, it's the policeman's drugs that's meant that he's not able to remember the situation fully.
He can't remember a thing.
But how have the CIA sort of stopped you from talking about it, or stopped the cameraman from talking about it? Have you been put under pressure over the years to keep quiet?
Well, it's funny you say that. The cameraman was shot dead in 1973.
Yeah. Where was he shot?
He was shot outside the gates of MGM.
Yeah.
He had a placard saying, this is where the moon landings were filmed.
Right.
And I have seen the footage. I'm telling you everything.
Right.
I shot the cameraman.
Under directions of Kubrick?
Yes. I've got the letter to prove it. Stanley sent me a letter in 1973 saying, this guy's making too much noise. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I'm filming Barry Lyndon inside the MGM studios and I can hear him screaming about the moon landings. Well, I said, what do you want me to do, Stanley? He said, I want you to shoot him. So I drove down there. I got out my rifle, loaded it with one bullet. I thought, if I'm lucky, I'm lucky. And if he's lucky, he's lucky. I missed. So about 2 days later, I went back. It was his day off, so that was a problem. Anyway, I called him and said, look, are you going to go down to MGM? I think we should blow the case. He said, yeah, I'm down there most days. I said, all right, what time are you going to be there tomorrow? He said, 11 a.m. I went down there, 11 a.m, and I shot him in the knee, and he fell over, and died.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So why is it you've come forward with this news now?
Well, there's three reasons. I'm dying.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
And I'd like to be able to afford to leave some money behind to my trust.
Trust?
Yes, I started a trust in the
year 2000. The Greg Onions Trust. Yeah.
The Greg Onions BA Trust, yes.
What does it? What does the trust do?
Where do you live, if I could ask?
Bristol.
Well, in Bristol, there will be at least 300 trees that, I hate to break it to you, are not trees.
Right.
They are loaded full of dynamite, microphones, and parcels, which I am afraid I do not know what is inside them.
And this is some CIA plot, is it? That various trees in all cities across the UK,
yes,
and presumably the world, are packed to the brim of dynamite and microphones and
packed to the branch with dynamite, microphones, yeah, and parcels.
Parcels containing,
I do not know, but they look very pretty. Now, every city in the UK has 300 trees.
300 exactly, irrespective of the size of the population?
Yes.
Right. So a village per capita might have a lot more dynamite and microphones than, say,
yes, well,
Liverpool.
If you live in a small town, it's going to, yeah, be a massacre. That's all I'll say.
Right.
So this trust that I set up is, yeah, for people to donate, and basically you give me money and I go tree by tree as I discover where they are. And,
yeah,
there's a website where I put, you know, where the trees are
sure,
in the city.
where the bomb and microphone trees are in each city. So people can avoid them on their day-to-day walks.
Exactly. You can do what you want with the information, but I'm saving lives. Saving lives!
Does it concern you that you don't know what's in the parcels? Or is it not a problem given that the other items are dynamite and microphones?
Nothing scares me anymore, Matthew. I was scared. I've always been scared. But a tree full of dynamite, I'll be honest, that's a lovely way to go, actually.
Is it?
If I climb a tree tomorrow and all of a sudden I hear the ticking of a bomb, I'll think, well, you know what I'll think? Maybe I will walk on the moon.
Who's arranged these trees? Sorry, is this the CIA?
MI5. In association with CIA.
In association?
Yes, the CIA wanted it to be a co-production to split costs.
And to what end? In case the country's overrun, or just to get rid of like dissidents? What's the plan behind the dynamite?
Yeah, it's to get rid of dissidents.
Yeah.
It's to get rid of dissidents.
Yeah, gotcha.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course you can.
What is dissidents?
I don't know. I think I've just made that up.
Is it like filth?
Dissidents, meaning a person who opposes official policy, especially that of an authoritarian state.
What am I thinking of?
Dissident.
Dissident.
Distant.
Discharge.
Yeah. Have you spoken to Kubrick since you did the filming?
Well, he died during the filming of I believe it was Eyes Wide Shut. Or AI, can't quite remember now. But I did have a cup of coffee with him. I went to his house in London. I told him that I'd enjoyed The Shining, that he was a master director.
Sure.
And then I also pitched a film to him.
Oh yeah, what was your film?
It was set in space.
Of course. You can do the background.
Well, yes. And it was about, a flying tree, yeah? But lands on the moon.
Right, and was this your way of sort of trying to get out about the CIA bomb trees?
Well, he did ask me why would there be a tree on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And what he didn't know was that before he'd moved into the house that he lived in, I had gone down his road and every tree was packed to the branch of dynamite.
And microphones.
And microphones.
Yeah, and parcels.
And he was pushing me to the front door at this point.
Sure.
He didn't like me being in his house when I started talking about this. But I said, Stanley, we need to raise you know, we need to let people know about this. So why don't we make it's a film about the moon, and there's a tree on the moon, and a couple of kids, they fly up there, they start playing on the moon, they realise it's packed full of dynamite. So they think, what are we going to do? So what they do is they start a fire at the bottom of the tree, they go to the top of the tree, and then the tree is then like a rocket that flies to Mars. When they're at Mars, they run around, and they're by this point grown up to be like adults. So there's a girl and a boy, they're both 40. They're on the moon. They need to stay warm, so they
they're on Mars. They're on Mars at this point.
So they make love. They make love. They have a baby. The baby is extraordinarily beautiful, and they live. They're very happy, actually. Then the dad sadly dies, and then it's a film about a mother, a single mother, and a baby living on Mars. The baby falls off Mars. It's a very sad moment, very sad. The mother is then helpless, and she thinks, I've got to get back to Earth. So she jumps, and we leave it there. Maybe a sequel, we never know.
And so just to clarify, Kubrick rejected this screenplay outright, and if I can just sort of remind myself of the story, it's about children that fly a tree to the moon, set fire to the tree, fly to Mars, bang, have a baby, the baby falls off Mars, the mum jumps off Mars, fade to black, to be continued.
To be continued, very good, yes, I might put that up, I might, do you know what, I might add that.
And what was the purpose of the film? Like, in the same way that people claim that Shining has references to the moon landing, you wanted to create a film that had references to the bomb trees that the CIA and MI5 are planting around the country.
Exactly. Exactly. The Shining was very interesting. You know, the little kid is wearing an Apollo 11 jumper. And, of course, what people don't know is that Jack Nicholson's part is very much based on my early 20s.
Oh, I see. You were an aspiring writer at the same time as being a decorator. And you went mad and tried to kill your family.
Well, that was never proven.
Sure. Now that more people are aware of these bomb trees, do you think there's going to be an uprising against the state? Or do you think the state have got everyone pretty much on lockdown now?
You've got to remember that these trees are keeping an eye on us. They're tracking our every word. And if they hear certain trigger words, they completely explode.
Obviously, I don't want to put you in any danger, but could you give us a flavour of what those trigger words are if you've got the window shut?
Well, I can tell you what happened when they were first made.
The words have changed over the years?
Oh, they change. Yes, they change with growing trends. But when they were first put in, there were some mistakes made. For example, a tree outside of Sainsbury's, just down the road from me, the trigger words that it was built to hear and then
explode,
you know, explode were sadly phrases like, is that trolley free? And I'm just going in for milk.
Right. Now, and what was it supposed to listen out for?
I've got a gun. Yep. Nobody move. And if I just give this lock a shimmy, I can get it free.
Gotcha. And on hearing that, a tree would spontaneously detonate.
Yeah. Now, when it did, so they obviously, after a tragic accident, they changed it to, like I said, two phrases. If I give this lock a little shimmy, it will break free. The tree then did explode when a burglar was trying to get into Sainsbury's.
Sure.
But what that did was it just smashed the windows and allowed them to get in quite easily and steal a lot of the stock.
So actually, as a deterrent, or I guess an aid to sort of trying to help society, trees laced with dynamite, keying off certain phrases, isn't the benefit that the CIA and MI5 perhaps fought?
Well, there was a year, and it was a very sad year for the economy, where burglars realised they could just whisper to the tree what they thought the tree was going to
explode on.
Yeah. And so, you know, there was a tree outside a Rolex shop, sure, and a couple of burglars. It took them about a week to realise what they needed to say. The tree presumably exploded, and they took the watches. It was sad.
Presumably, if they're whispering to the tree, there's quite a degree of proximity there to the tree themselves.
Yes, but the tree only explodes outwards. It explodes directionally.
But they're built for the sole purpose of exploding upon hearing certain phrases, but they explode away from that phrase.
Well, this is a problem with them. I mean, I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not saying they're perfect. And going back to my original point, that's why I set up this trust in the year 2000 that I would like... The reason why I'm revealing all my secrets now, to raise a bit of money, so people know that they can avoid these trees. Now, a lot of people have said to me, John, surely if you're telling
Greg.
People where the trees are... A lot of people have been saying to me, Greg, surely you're telling people where these trees are so they'll know, they can just whisper in them, they can explode and cause havoc.
Yeah.
Yes, that is obviously something I've thought about. But you know what? Sometimes you've got to put your hands up and say, I'm too thick to realise what to do about that now.
And then sort of finally, what do you want your legacy to be? You want to sort of just have told the world about this, about the fake moon landing, about these bomb trees?
You know, I just, genuinely, if I'm going to be, you know, I'm a humble man, I think. I would like to be remembered as a fantastic painter, a superb varnisher, someone who could plaster his way out of any trouble.
Plaster his way out of trouble?
Yes.
How would that play out?
Well, you know... You get into a bit of trouble,
yeah,
and you think to yourself, how am I going to get out of this?
Yeah, I know what I'll do. I'll plaster my way out of this.
I'll plaster my way out of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's just saying the same words, but over a longer period of time. just very quickly, and we can end on this. How would you use plaster to escape?
Well, I remember being on the, to put it mildly, the wrong side of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
I thought, how do I get to the other side?
Sure.
Plaster bit of plaster.
Yourself. Yeah, gotcha.
Leave it dry. Run across it, no questions asked.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I do want to ask some more questions, like, were you on the wrong side, what were you escaping for, what was over on the other side?
Well, I got caught with my trousers around my ankles.
Yeah, metaphorically or literally?
Metaphorically. Sorry, does that mean having trousers around my ankles? Because I did have trousers around my ankles.
Right.
So I got caught having an affair with a married man.
Yeah.
I had my trousers around my ankles, and his wife barged in.
Well, into the Grand Canyon.
They lived on a hut next to the Grand Canyon.
Right.
His wife barged in, said, I've caught you with your trousers around your ankles.
Yeah, metaphorically and literally.
I jumped out the window, shifted to the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Thought, I'm in a lot of trouble here. I made good my escape. Never saw the guy again.
Mm.
And, you know, that's the life I've lived. And, you know, some will say it's crazy. Some will say I've talked a lot of bollocks. But as I said earlier, as with the paintbrush, the mustard jar, the hog hair, a little can go a long way, Matthew.
Thank you. Well, that sounds like it means enough of a thing to end on. Greg Onions, BA, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been genuinely an absolute joy, and to all your listeners, may I wish them love, and I hope everyone is okay at this terrible time.
Well, that's all we've got time for. This episode was researched by John Kearns, edited by Matt Ewins, and the theme music was by Nikki Green. At some point in the future, we might go back to recording these gigs in front of a live audience, so follow our Twitter account @microscopefun for details on that. Next time, I'll be talking to a TV chef that has been accused of murder, but until then, remain vigilant and catch you next time on Microscope.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.